We're live at Oakdale Golf and Country Club here in the heart of Toronto, RBC Canadian Open, the Pro-Am happening today. Brian Hazy, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, and James Duffy around the table, also known as a Pro-Am veteran.
Right? Celebrity.
A
celebrity.
What kind of nonsense did you get up to today?
I just looked at the scoreboard on the way over here. Team Hayes, I think T24, Team Duffy, T9.
Wow.
Who did you get as a pro today?
It's my first top 10 of the year. We had Mac Hughes for the front nine, which was we played the back nine first, and Cam Champ for the other nine, and they were both awesome. Particularly Mac, obviously. Mm-hmm. He was just couldn't have been better. I played with a bunch of Bell guys. All our kids were on the bags. They were just awesome. That's the one thing. When you come to these things, there's so many, you know, there's so many nice guys.
Yeah.
And obviously the Canadian guys are good, but Mac was awesome. I think he was maybe 4 under on the side we played with him. And Cam's a really good guy too, and he had lots to say. Dillette had warned me, he said, "Cam, you're not going to get too many words out of him." He's like, "Quiet." But I got him going on the whole thing yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. We talked
about live golf and all this stuff?
Because he was one of the guys who was offered money. Obviously not one of the top-tiered guys, and I didn't get into amounts with him, but I figure he was probably offered $30 million or something like that to go. So he was not happy, but he was willing to wait and see.
Jimmy, wow. I have a theory, and we briefly discussed it last night via text. And I even confirmed with the high-profile golf agent today, and he said no. But I have to think that Monahan would have informed Tiger Woods and or Rory McIlroy before doing something like this, unless it's over Monahan's head and he's just along for the ride too. Because wouldn't you think the last thing that he would want would one or two or both of those guys to be pissed at him?
Well, Rory said, I believe today, that Jimmy Dunn, who is the guy who put this together, right, that he had left a phone message for him the night before saying, "Call me in the morning." And so Rory had about a 2-hour heads up, but that's it. You would think Tiger would as well. Like, I'm sure there was a call put into Tiger, but Tiger probably didn't take the call.
Because when you got all those guys in the room and they're apparently all pissed off and they're standing ovation asking for new leadership, and then Rory comes out and says, "I have faith in Jay as the guy going forward."
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It just seems
probably
like
a side conversation.
I was going to say, couldn't you see someone from, like, the Saudis reaching out and saying, "Because we got to work together here."
Yeah.
Like, we want in on the Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy business, and whether you like it or not, this is coming, and I want to give you the heads up. Like, that's a backroom succession type call. Like, Tiger direct, "Hey, we're coming.
Yeah.
Monahan's going to sell you out." That's what I'd love to see. That's the kind of action I'm looking for.
It's too bad the Netflix guys were not in on any of this stuff.
Right.
That would be the greatest season of television ever.
Yeah,
ever.
Actually,
they tried to sneak into the meeting yesterday, apparently, and they were in there for the first 30 seconds and then got kicked out.
Really?
So, but, it, you know, it's fascinating talking to these guys. They are really, you know, Mac's a really smart guy, and he's a member of the committee there, mm-hmm. which he's, I think, upset about as well. He told you guys yesterday. And their worlds have been turned upside down, but I think the realistic thing is, in 3 weeks, if Jay Monahan, you know, irons out the details and they sit down in a meeting and he says the purses are going to be 4 times what they are right now, every event's $30 million or something, and you're going to be made whole in some way. And I think, you know, it would to make all the top guys, the guys who are asked to go, even the Cameron Champs, sort of the second-tier guys who are asked to go, to make all those guys whole, to give them the money they could have had, probably $2 billion or something like that, those guys will write a check in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
I mean, all you got to take care of is Rory and Scheffler and Rahm and Spieth and Thomas, and then maybe throw a little bit at some of these other guys. And the Saudis will do that.
They have so much money. They're already spending money on all these soccer players, and a lot of them are way over the hill. Mm-hmm. They just want the names, and they want their foot in the door. And I'm curious if you feel like it's possible for them to infiltrate the big four sports over here. The NFL, yeah, you believe that?
I think it will happen at some point. And again, it's slowly acceptance. I think golf has been different. Look, F1 and soccer, football, they don't talk about that much, frankly, more European-based, and I think it's kind of accepted, whereas America, the PGA is an American institution, and 9/11 is an American thing that happened to America, even though it happened to the world. So all this stuff, I think, goes a little harder in the U.S., mm-hmm. but and I'm not saying this is a good thing, but unfortunately, I think over time they will get what they want is acceptance through this. And
well, if they're here, you may not have another choice.
Could you imagine,
right? You can't go on SportsCenter every night and say, "We also want to point out this, that, and the other." Mm-hmm. Like, at some point, it's just going to be baked in.
Yeah. When the light went off for me about the volume of money these guys have was in Qatar at the World Cup, where they built this subway system, which was the most beautiful subway I've ever been on, and they didn't build it for the future of the city. They built it to take people to the stadiums for 1 month.
Right.
For 1 month. I mean, some of the lines are still useful, but some of them I don't think really are, but they didn't care. The streets were air-conditioned. They don't care. They have so much money. They will
fire
spend
that up
it
downtown
on
Toronto. The air conditioning.
I'm
conditioned
walking down streets. The street outside the big stadium for, and I'm like, why is this cool? There, because there's vents popping air conditioning into the streets.
Wild.
So they, it's an amount of money that we can't comprehend in North American society, and they will do whatever it takes. And so I think in the end, the anger will subside and the players will probably accept. Not for sure. I mean, maybe Monahan will get ousted and they'll stay angry with him. But he probably is a savvy enough businessman that he knows, you know, that money will win these guys over and that he probably has enough of it.
I'll tell you what, cash is king. But do you imagine the amount of money they would have to promise or put in to get involved in the NFL?
Well, That's the crown jewel of
right.
North American sport.
Right.
And it's specifically the United States. Like, and it's one thing to have ownership over one team, but that doesn't put you on any level. Like,
right.
That's you have one voice in the room. Jerry Jones is more powerful than you, right? I don't know what that would look like.
What if they can't get into the NFL or the NBA and they get into the National Hockey League?
Gary Bettman puts his hands up.
I mean, would that be shocking?
You know, a league that has been forever trying to become, get in the same conversation with those other leagues and has always struggled to do so. You know, I'm knowing Gary Bettman well enough, he'll have that conversation in a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
Right? So it's fascinating. And the whole sport washing thing, look, I'm troubled like everybody else is by all of this. But it's all curious to me. Because, and maybe this is superficial, but, you know, the idea of sport washing is the Saudis will spend tons of money and slowly get global acceptance and influence and so on and so forth, and will normalize everything. But I don't see it that way. Like, do you look at, I still can separate them owning the, you know, having a big chunk of the PGA Tour, and what happened to Khashoggi is still an awful thing. And I think most of us are smart enough to separate all those things. So I don't know what they get out of it all.
Bad things happen, and regardless of any, you know, society, all of that type of stuff. You name it. Like, it's, you're right. It doesn't. You should be able to separate it because, you know, the reporter, what happened to him, that's awful in throughout the world. It's not just, you know.
Oh, but the human rights stuff and everything. I don't. It doesn't make me see them any differently because they invest heavily in sports, and so. You know, I get the same. I'm sure you guys get on when I'm covering the World Cup. You shouldn't be there. You're a victim of sport washing and everything. Well, I don't see it that way. I'm still going to cover the sports because that's my job. But I can still criticize the regime for what they do, and will continue to.
Because you have common sense, though. That's
I guess I don't know. I don't get it to an extent.
Yeah, and I mean that's a very complex conversation about where you draw the line.
Let's go back to the rough here at Oakdale.
Yeah, the rough at Oakdale. That's pretty wild stuff.
Think about when you were saying that, though, James, is like, do you think they start with Ottawa? You know, what would the team that they start with?
It's Arizona. Ottawa. They bring in Ryan Reynolds, so it's Yasser and Ryan Reynolds at the news conference. Reynolds is back in.
It's got to be, like, to me, it's Arizona.
Mm-hmm. I think they'd build a rink overnight.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they'd have a rink.
Nobody would question it.
There would not be a doubt that there'd be a rink.
Yeah,
and they'd be out of that university in a heartbeat.
I'm sorry if you talked about it already. How was your experience out there?
I had a great time.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Like, you know, playing is – no one's there.
No.
There's pros playing. Like,
right.
No one's actually like, hey, I wonder what Hayes is doing. but I thought it was phenomenal, like always. You're inside the ropes. It's such a cool situation. We were saying, like, this is a massive plot of land, like a massive property up here at Oakdale, and the fact that the logistics just go off, like, no problem. Everyone knows when you're supposed to be on the tee. You get off, you go out there, you have a great time. Got to play with a lot of really, really cool people. Mm-hmm. And it was just awesome. And the weather, any bad shot, I blame on the smoke.
Yeah.
Right?
Like
it got in the eyes, and that's why I shanked that shot.
And Grappler jammed him up, too, with
the smoke. And sometimes I couldn't see through the rough with the smoke that was here.
What do you want me to do?
Yeah. That's probably 9 shots in the cap.
I would say minimum a handicap of 9.
But I find I do, because I'm such an idiot, I do get fooled. Like, you know, I had a really good start, like par the first 4 holes, and I start to, like, strut like DJ. You know, I'm walking down the... Walking with Mac, just like I see them on TV on the weekend. We're having a casual conversation, and you feel like a pro.
I know.
And then you, like, completely shake to it.
You realize you actually suck, and you left your wedge back
on
13.
We all know the job you do hosting big time. When you get called on the first tee, are you nervous?
Yeah, I wasn't as bad this year. The first one I did, the 2015 Canadian Open, was at Glen Abbey, and there must have been 1,000 people around the first tee. And I was so nervous that I couldn't get the tee in the ground because my hand was shaking. And I must have sat there for 30 seconds.
And the fans noticed that, too. Watch this guy. Man.
They really
did. They do. They're like, watch this.
I was better today. But I could do TV in front of 10 million people. But, you know, golf in front of 300 or something
is different, isn't it?
Because it's not your comfort zone. And you're not, I know that I'm a loser.
Right.
And that I'm going to do something awful.
Exactly.
And so you have no confidence.
Exactly. Like, my first shot of the day, the swing is so bad. It's such an awful, jabby, short, pukey swing. But I was so nervous. I was like, please don't Tom kite this thing. Like, just get it up.
Was there potential kite victims?
Oh, there were people around.
Oh, Mac Hughes almost got hit around. Like 3 times by someone in our group. And then there's one hole where the amateur range is right by the tee box for the pros. Like, it's a couple hundred yards back.
Right.
And there were balls coming, and looked legitimately okay.
Yeah,
like
concerning.
He was ducking behind the signs.
It's concerning. Yeah.
But that's over today.
It's over today. And tomorrow it's go time. Do you have a feeling one way or the other how this could play out?
Well, I do have a feeling, and, you know, sometimes you get sucked in as like mid-handicap guys like ourselves are thinking how hard it is, and then you go watch these guys on the weekend and they're awesome. But, you know, even talking to Mac and Cam Champ today, like, Cam said that this is the toughest rough other than the U.S. Open that they'll play on tour all year.
Wow.
Which says something.
Including Oak Hill, which they just went through, is wild.
That's what he said. And so, you know, early at the beginning of the week, a lot of people were saying, oh, it's going to be 30 under, whatever. I don't think so anymore. I'm thinking, like, maybe 15 or 16 or something like that. I might be completely wrong. Somebody might bang out a 61 tomorrow, but
right, that's kind of what I was picking up on too, just the caddies speaking and different people. Like,
that stretch from 3 to 6 is a legitimately anywhere on tour hard stretch.
Yes.
Of golf.
Yeah,
like really hard stretch.
Exactly.
We went 9 under on the front, which was the back, sorry, so 10 through 18 we were 9 under. Like I said, I was strutting like DJ to the tee. We were the leaderboard came up. We're up first on the leaderboard. And then poor Cam Champ takes over, and we were 1 under on the back.
Wow. That's with getting strokes.
So 8 strokes difference between the 2 holes. And I honestly think with the pros, it'll be 4, you know, on an average, like 4 strokes difference or something like that.
Like, I think someone will shoot 29 on the back. I think that'll happen. Mm. Someone will knock out like 7 birdies in the 40s on the front, like a lot of guys who shoot 40, 41, you know, and that's probably the way it should be. You're going to balance it out. The course should be difficult. It's an open championship. Like, St. George's played that way until Sunday last year, when all of a sudden Justin Rose shot a 60, and all of a sudden guys started putting up 63, 64, 65. It held together really, really well, and I hope that's the case. I hope 15 under wins it. Because it just has a different vibe when it's 28 under on Sunday. You know, and you're looking at it.
It feels like the John Deere or something like that.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And you want it as a Canadian Open
to challenge it.
Somewhere in the teens or something would be nice. Right?
Do you think it's a more compelling story if McIlroy wins or if a Canadian wins?
Well, if a Canadian wins, just
because. Always? Yeah.
Always, but Rory's always second.
Even given what's been going on here this week? Doesn't matter?
Doesn't matter. More compelling story worldwide if it's Rory 100%. But for us, guys, it's 1952 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And before that, it was like 1912 or something.
Yeah. Right.
And Pat Fletcher wasn't even born, I think, in Canada. So, I think if, you know, Mac or Connors or Hadwin or one of those guys, Nicky Taylor, my boy Cockrell, one of those guys would be an amazing story.
Jimmy, do you think the Cup final, is it tough to, like, get the juices going about it?
It's
like there was so much time leading up to it, and then there's another 2 days. It's like obviously the Vegas market's invested, Florida too, but...
And the games didn't go well either from that standpoint, right? The first 50 minutes of game one, you said, okay, we're going to have a series here, right? We sat at the desk and we got something, and looked now good. We're like, oh, man.
Well, last game was a disaster by the end.
I kind of feel like I want it over now, and I don't want to feel that way as a guy who loves the game.
Yeah.
But I'm like, okay, let's just end this thing. It's been too long, and I don't want it that way. I mean, I love it for Florida to come back and go seven, but it's got zero jam right now.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's too bad.
Is there any chance in your guys' mind that Florida can make this a series?
I think so, based on what they've already done this year, using the Boston experience. But it doesn't mean anything with a completely different set of circumstances.
I know, and just because you did that in round one against Boston doesn't mean there's any kind of guarantee
of course
that you magically pop up in a series.
Just saying that it did happen before. This has been a team that has persevered. I think it all comes down to one guy, and
Bobrovsky.
It's Bob. Yes, it's Bob. If Bob shows up tomorrow night and looks like the Bobrovsky we've seen for the past month, game on. If they win tomorrow night and Bob stands on his head, then they can absolutely win the series. I think if they win tomorrow and he's terrible, they're done. As weird as that sounds. I think it's incumbent that he is a stud again. It's the only reason they made it this far. I'm sorry. To simplify it, yes, they got clutch play. Yes, they played tough. It was Bobrovsky. That's why they got through Toronto in five. That's why they swept Carolina. It is. And now it's not the case anymore, and they're down 2-0.
I don't really buy usually like the long layoff thing, but Bobrovsky, because he got hot so fast, you think the 10 days wasn't a good thing?
I think it might be a coincidence, but it's something to look at.
You have all this stuff going for you, the entire team.
He needed 2 days off, that's it.
And then 10, and you kind of lose.
But I, you know, in watching those first two games, and when you're on a roll, everything goes right. Puck hits the post and stays out. Puck hits the crossbar. A guy blocks a shot on the back door instead of it trickling through. Right now, he's not on his game. The other night, a goal got scored through Mahura. It went through his arm underneath the bar. Like any other series, that when things were going well for them, it hits Mahura and stays out.
Right.
You know, Casey Fitzgerald gets kind of turned around, and then he tries to come back to the middle of the ice, and it goes between his legs, off the post, short side. Like, it's almost like, okay, the clock has struck midnight, and Cinderella, like that Cinderella story, like, they were getting a lot of, and when you're playing well and things are going well,
they created a lot on their own.
You get some positive bounces. Aiden Hill's getting some positive bounces. He's had a couple dragged off the goal line by his D-men where he's turned the other way and it hits him and it's going in and he helps. He pulls one off the goal line. Like Nick Cousins had two opportunities to put that in the net.
Right.
Hill stops it with a stick and then Pietrangelo jams it and gets it out of there. Like sometimes the timing of your good luck is a big part of it as well. That hasn't happened for Bobrovsky, especially after this break.
Right. Yeah, exactly. In the Cup Final, he was making so many stops that were not routine look routine.
Right.
That it became an expectation that he'll just keep doing it, and it just wasn't.
Yeah.
It was never going to be possible. But
can you tell me when we're down to 1 minute in the segment? I have to, you know, this is the show I go on and I confess all my things. And
okay.
I want to ask you
Give
guys.
It to us.
I did something a little greasy today, and I want you to.
Okay.
To
what
see
do you
if
have?
It's okay.
What do you got? Now we got to hear it.
I didn't. This is going to sound like a humble brag. It's not, but I did not expect like kids asking for balls from me and like to autograph balls on the golf course during the day. Like
right.
Max Hughes,
said,
I expect.
I don't give away.
So balls. No, the first two, I'm like, no problem. You know, again, I kind of proud. I feel like a pro golfer. I'm signing the balls, but then like the second two kids, now I'm looking back. I only got like five Pro Vs in my bag.
You're done,
right? I don't. They're brand new Pro Vs, and they're the little 6-year-old guy with his Sharpie, and so I got like this really. Like scuffed up, you know, noodle or
Kirkland,
something.
Kirkland.
I had a Kirkland and a noodle at the bottom of my bag. Like, and I just here sign and I sign that and gave.
I think that's totally acceptable.
Yes.
I think it's totally acceptable.
Range ball. You had a couple range balls
and the dads there, and he just kind of rolls his eyes, dude.
We'll make sure to keep this James Duffy's Kirkland golf ball.
So I apologize to that family. I was worried I was going to run out of balls.
And with the way the rough plays,
I was going to have to DQ myself.
Exactly.
It was like tin cup.
You'd go back and demand the kid give you the ball.
Cheech was going to say last ball, man.
Last golf ball story is Stevie Williams at the U.S.
Unbelievable.
Open, where he's like, Tiger was putting in his room and he had four golf balls in there and I forgot to grab them and put them in his bag. And he gets to 18 at Pebble. He rips one in the water, and there's only one left.
And he doesn't tell him.
No, he just says, here, pal, here's the last one. And he's like, oh, my God. He rips it down the fairway and wins by a zillion.
Let me ask you guys one quick question. Mm-hmm. Kirkland balls.
Yeah.
I think are they any good?
I think they're good.
Because keep in mind, those Costco brands, they're on par.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, Costco doesn't mess around.
My understanding is Costco, like vodka, it says Kirkland or whatever. It's like Grey Goose in the Kirkland bottle.
Yeah, down in the States. I don't know if they sell it up here.
Point being is, are those Kirkland balls any good? They could be like
I think they're pretty good.
Nike ball. I'm so cheap and pathetic that at my club I have this thing called Kirkland time. So I'll start with my TaylorMade golfs, my TaylorMade balls, my my TP5s.
Yeah.
And when I lose like my third TP5, like around 12. It's Kirkland
time.
Because I'm not going to go to a second sleeve.
That's greasy.
I like that play, though. I like that play. It's frugal, is what it is.
I should be doing ads.
It's smart play.
It's Kirkland time.
Like those, you're a legitimate player and a good player, though. Like if you play with someone that doesn't play often and there's like a par three over water, they go back to the bag and get a brutal ball.
Oh, it's a great commercial. 220 over water, you just hand the guy a Kirk.
Yeah,
just say,
hit that thing into the water.
Bobby Mack's the best. He's got like three balls in his pocket, and no one gets back down on the tee. Like, he's the world record holder. Tees off, ball's gone. Ball's back, another ball's back on the tee.
He reloads immediately.
The quickest reloader in the West.
Listen, that is a talent, though. It really is. Mm-hmm. It's a talent. All right, JD, great stuff, buddy. Thanks for popping in, and you'll be here all week, I guess, right?
Yeah, we'll see you guys all week long.
Yeah, we're going to be here the rest of the week.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Thank you, guys.
There he is, James Duffy.